Hey, this is Brent McManus, Denver Broncos Super Bowl champion, and you listen to The Scoop on AlScoop.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Scoop. This is Season 5, Episode 31. I'm John DiCarlo, and we are all doing this and recording this virtually, given the obvious uncertain and kind of anxious times that we're going through right now with the outbreak of the coronavirus. So with me on the phone, I have the Sams, Sam Cohn, Sam Newman, Graham Foley is joining us on the phone. And we're thrilled to have Colin Thompson with us today. Colin has, I guess, quarantined himself down in Florida. Unfortunately, the XFL season has come to a close just like everything else. But Colin's going to be with us for a while talking about the XFL, talking about what might have been with spring practice with Temple football and what his future plans are. How's everybody doing? Are you guys staying safe? You keeping yourselves occupied?
Losing my mind a little bit, but all is well.
That's Sam Cohn checking in.
Colin, I'm staying occupied. I'm in Reading, actually. So
Sam Newman in Reading, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's where my girlfriend lives, so I'm staying with her family.
Sam
quarantine
Newman,
and chill, huh?
Sam Newman, yeah. Bragging about having a girlfriend. Colin, what's going on down in Florida?
Well, a whole lot of not quarantine. today at 5 p.m., all the bars be closed here, which will start some moving some people around a bit, and I believe the beaches will probably start to close too, because they're just trying to get people away from these areas that essentially bring a lot of people in. I'm here right now between Panama City and Destin and Santa Rosa Beach area, and with my girlfriend and her family in their condo hanging out. I was here last year when the AAF folded, and obviously here again now that the XFL folded, just short ride up from Tampa. But the beach is packed with people. And I'm walking the street here, and it's just business as usual. So it's a very unique feeling, even though everyone should be inside and quarantining.
Colin, what's it like? I mean, this is kind of unprecedented for everybody. I mean, it's probably not the best comparison, but the one thing I think of when everybody was kind of just looking around and wondering what the heck's going on was when the 9/11 attacks happened. Obviously a different thing, a different time, certainly a tragedy. But in terms of like the uncertainty and now being a pro athlete, when your season comes to an end, and thankfully you guys are getting, as far as we know from what we read, you guys are getting paid through the end of the season. You get your benefits through the end of the season, which is obviously a good move by them. What is this like when you feel like you find a niche and then this happens? What's it like for you as a pro athlete when something like this happens?
Well, I guess it's a range of emotions, and you don't really know how to take it initially, other than the fact that, okay, you come to grips with it, but then you just get barraged by everyone else's emotions about it. Your teammates, your coaches. Maybe you're over it, and all of a sudden your family calls, and they're bummed. Or, your coaches talk to the team maybe 24 hours after you know it's going to be canceled, and they're really bummed. So it's just like it's a roller coaster of emotions, to be honest with you. Or you come to grips with it, and then people bring you back down, and it's depressing in a way. But it's something that we did in the AAF, obviously on a much different scale. This is a world issue, and then the world of sports issue, obviously, which is minute to the health of our world, our country, has been rocked, and that's rocked a lot of people's personal interests. So people are calling to complain to me about it. I'm like, listen, I'm the one going through it. I hear you. So you're right, though. First pass by the XFL. We technically didn't lose our jobs. We're going to make our minimum all the way through, which is pretty impressive. And I'll continue to use the word first class, because that was my experience with the XFL. My teammates will agree. I'm sure PJ Walker, who lit up the league and is the league MVP, he can agree. It was a great experience for all of us, and I really enjoyed my time there.
So Tampa was 1-4, and you guys were in last place in the XFL East, but in the one win that you guys did have over the DC Defenders, you had that 13-yard catch off the deflection. It became a highlight. He did that Brent Celek first down signal, and people got a kick out of that. I think I read the last time you did that, your high school coach benched you. What was that like? I mean, because it looks like a league where you guys, it might sound trite, but it looks like a league where you guys, among competing and just beyond the obvious desire to win games, it looked like you guys were having fun. And in that moment, that seemed to kind of epitomize it. What was that like, just to get a catch, have some fun, and kind of react that way the way you did?
Yeah, it was my first and only catch of the XFL. It was, I think I'm the first player ever to have more targets. Have more catches than targets. And it was a great experience catching that ball in a great game. We're a really good football team. If you watch this play after being just rocked by the noise in Seattle in front of 30,000 people, you would have seen, wow, this is a really good team. We should have beat Houston. It was the best team in the league. We took them to the wire and should have won, and they got some lucky bounces, and that's just how the game goes. And we whooped DC, and our last game, we should have won as well. So against LA, we were up huge, 24-0, I believe, at one point in time, and came back and lost. It's a really good football team. Led the league in rushing. I think we led the league in passing. We may have surpassed Houston late. I forget the whole deal, but essentially a team moving in the right direction. And long story short, we just didn't get it done in the win column. But to go back to your catch and your question about the catch, yeah, that was an unbelievable moment for me. We ran a play action pass that we run frequently, and I drifted a little more than I really wanted to. It probably bought me about 3 or 4 yards downfield. But nonetheless, I was in the right place I needed to be. The ball, quarterback threw it across his body, and the defender made a nice play on it that just popped the ball up. And I just shot and slid underneath of it. And be honest with you, me turning and running to the football would never, ever would have happened the way I do it now if it wasn't for Ed Boley and the Temple football staff when I was there. I say it all the time. You guys know I sing their praises, but it was different than anywhere I've been. And it is still different than anywhere that I've gone to after Temple. When it comes to running and chasing the football and doing the little things right on the field, it's true. And now you see they've all moved on to the Carolina Panthers, and some are still at Baylor, and some are still at Temple. They all do great things. But to back to your catch and your question and the catch, what a cool experience. I never point first down. Steve Devil, my high school coach, I did it against St. Joe's Prep in a 42-7 victory my senior year. Skylar Morningweg, that group, they had a good team. And it was pouring rain, and we were a running football team, and we whooped them. And I caught a ball on a big third down conversion for us early in the game, and I pointed first down in the pouring rain. Tom Moore, a friend of mine who wrote that article you're referring to, John, you know, he said it was movie-like rain. It really was. So I was fired up to make the catch. I pointed. Steve brought me right over to the sideline, put the other tight end for a play, you know, ripped me pretty good, and then put me back in the game. And he said, we're all business here at Archbishop Wood. He's right. We were. So went to Temple, you know, and I didn't really do it at Temple either. I didn't have a ton of catches either really to do it, let's be honest. But long story short, I got the emotion of the XFL, the emotion of the fans. They encourage this. The Bud Light Seltzers after the game, win. It was a great atmosphere. Your commissioner's handing cups for a beer snake in D.C. That's the type of environment they created there, and we really enjoyed playing in it. I know our fans enjoyed going to games. We had a passionate fan base, really, really unique, and I loved it. I really did.
Just from your perspective, can you tell us what life was like in the league, from the practices right down to game day stuff on TV, where reporters have so much more access to also the behind-the-scenes stuff?
Yeah, so early on, it was chaotic, I think. That first game, D.C.-Seattle, Tom Luganville and I think it was Molly McGrath, they're running around with sideline. They're, like, sprinting, and they're just shoving mics in people's faces, and you heard cursing, and you just heard pure, raw nature to the game. And I think that was really a great experience for the first game. And then they realized that this is a little chaotic. And then we played Sunday, the day after, about 24 hours after that game, and you saw a much more revised version of what they were doing. Aaron Murray got interviewed probably once a quarter, and it was very docile, I guess you could say, a very relaxed interview, kind of like a post-game or halftime interview with a coach or a player. It was a much different atmosphere, and I think our game actually was as much fun. The D.C. crowd looked awesome. I was looking forward to playing there. But It was great. I think the fans appreciated the rule changes. I think they appreciated the insight they can hear from referees. It's all stuff that makes complete sense for the NFL will do. And I do think that they will adapt it over time, I hope, because as a fan of the NFL, a fan of the XFL, and someone who's played in both, really, and the AAF too, the AAF did some of this stuff as well. So I really enjoyed all of it. And it was a heck of an experience when it comes to the social media and the way to get your brand out there. They did everything right for the players, I thought, on and off the field.
Yeah, Colin, to that point, what specific rules do you think the NFL will take on, either from discussions you've had or just your general insight of what worked well for the XFL?
I don't really know, to be honest with you, what specific rules they will do. I'll just say this. I think the referee one is consensus with everybody. Hey, the ref, you may not agree with the refs, but the ref may tell you what they saw. And I think the human aspect of it will be like, okay, wow. Like, most people, when they talk to an NFL player and they meet him on the street, they're like, oh, wow, they're like a normal human being. And then you see him in a game, and you're like, or on TV, like we look like, or I shouldn't say we, but they on TV now look like a gladiator. It's like the same with the ref. Like, the minute the ref explains what they saw, whether you agree or not, you're like, well, I can see what he's saying. I still think he's wrong. But there's a clear and concise point, and it's to the moment. So if the NFL makes that clear, I think people will be much easier on refs because at least they were able to plead their case. So I can see something like that being over. I don't think the coach's access is really that important. You're still going to get your coach speak. I don't like the fact that you can hear the plays. That will definitely never happen in the NFL. But it was unique for our league. I think the one thing that should change, the NFL should adopt, is the fact that offensive players get the call in their headset. I get the call. Other than the offensive line, every skill player can hear the play call from the offensive coordinator. So all the quarterback has to do is just tell the offensive line what the protection is, what the run game is, and we're rolling. So our play clock was shorter by, I think, 10 seconds or whatever it was, or 15 seconds. So it just sped everything up. I didn't feel rushed. I always thought we had plenty of time on the play clock. I knew the play, and I was running the ball. So you got more plays in. And I thought that was a really unique thing that the NFL and really college sports, everything can do, especially with the technology today. It is so easy to do. Put a little headpiece in the helmet, and everyone can hear what's going on.
Hey, Colin, before I turn things over to Sam Newman here for a couple questions, you mentioned PJ. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about just the amazing season that he had. How much fun was it for you to see that, for him to see him get as much attention as he did, and just to see him play as well as he did?
Well, I'll start with the Talbot Temple players first, then I'll move to PJ because we all know how well he did.
Sure.
Every single week, the defensive staff or the offensive staff would come to me and say, talk to me about this player from Temple. I'm being dead honest with you. It was every single week. What do they like? What do they do? Tell me some tendencies. What type of game do they play? We played somebody every week. Boozer in D.C., Praise in Seattle, PJ in Houston, Adonis in L.A., Jalen in L.A., Robinson, and Adonis Jennings. So it was very unique, and it's very special for me to be a part of that. And I really enjoyed that. And then, obviously, PJ, I mean, he lit it up. The amount of text, phone calls, people just texting me that watch Temple football or supported my career are saying, yo, PJ Walker is just tearing it up. This is so much fun to watch. You've told me how great of a guy he was forever. He told me he's one of your favorite teammates. So as a friend of his and really one of my best friends in football and in life, PJ, I was really fired up for him. I mean, he played unbelievable. He was in the perfect offense for his abilities. And really, the sky's the limit for him. It's always been that way. He's kind of been hidden in Indianapolis, and now he's the opportunity to show what he can do on the field and really just tear the XFL up with that June Jones offense and their skilled players. I don't think they had a tight end on the roster. They didn't have a fullback on the roster, and they may have handed it off, I don't know, 10 times a game. But we gave them all they could handle, and PJ told me after the game we're by far and away the best team they played that year in the XFL. So it's a shame we didn't pull it off and have a better year, but for PJ, couldn't be happier. I'm sure we'll be reading here soon that he'll be signing a contract with the team.
Hey, Colin, what was it like playing for Mark Trestman? He has such an interesting background where he left the profession at times over the years to be a lawyer and even work in bond sales. But how was it like to play for a guy like him?
Yeah, it's much different than I've ever experienced. A super cerebral, a super he evaluates himself. He evaluates some staff different than any coach I've been around. He's very always open door, which a lot of coaches are, but I don't know how much I really mean it. And he's truly able to be flexible for the players. We had very, very short practices. That's what we were going to do. I'm talking no more than an hour on the field, on and off your feet. Now, we had walkthroughs and we had meetings, but practices were short. You're going to get your cardio in quickly. You're going to get off the field for recovery. And we felt fresh every week and ready to go. So Mark was very different when it comes to that, and I thought he was ahead of his time when it comes to, great, you believe in sports science, but we're still on the field for 2.5 hours. But, you know, we're on the field for literally an hour with Mark, and there's pros and cons to that. But I enjoyed the pros for sure. And then off the field, super cerebral. I've used that name with him, the word with him a lot. He said when we had the first team meeting, guys, you're going to have a whatever, 100-something day. We were with the team, if you're a Viper, all the way through. You're going to have a 100-plus day crash course on leadership. That's what this is going to be. And I hammered every note down I could, just like I did with Matt Rules there. Whether I'm going to coach or be in business, this is such valuable stuff that a lot of players just sit and pass by, and then they're older and they're coaching, or they're older and they're in business, or they're older and they're trying to help their kids. And I have books of it. So I'm very fortunate that my mom, who writes everything down, told me to do this, and I've done it my entire career. So I have all of it, and it's pretty special to me. So Mark was very, very unique, and he's super, super smart offensively, but when it comes to just people and managing different personalities, he's a very unique coach for sure. Love playing for him.
Switching gears here, you had mentioned Matt Rhule, your former coach, and some NFL news. Looks like the Panthers are parting ways with Cam Newton in terms of giving him permission to seek a trade or whether they release him, although it looks like he has a problem with that and took issue with it. And it also looks like they're close to signing Teddy Bridgewater. From where you sit and knowing just Matt as a person, as a coach, do you think this is him bringing in Teddy Bridgewater to be a bridge quarterback or to a guy that they draft next month, or as a long-term starter?
Oh, he's a long-term starter. I don't, and again, I don't know what coach wants to do. I have a personal relationship with Matt, but I haven't spoken to him about any of this, but I'm just speaking again. I want to make it crystal clear. This is just my opinions, not anything from Matt. But Teddy he's a pro's pro. He did really well in Minnesota. He overcame so many obstacles, goes to New Orleans in a perfect situation. Also worked with Joe Brady, the current offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers, who was with LSU and then was with New Orleans before. So he worked with Joe Brady before. He knows what Joe likes to do. He knows some of the similar terminology. And it's really the perfect fit for off the field, because Teddy, gotten to know Teddy a little bit. I played him in a Sugar Bowl when I was in Florida. Is the perfect guy for Matt. He's super mature. He's tough. He gets it. He's the face of a franchise that is going through a reboot process, whether it's the right thing or whatever it is. I'm not saying that is. It just is what it is. It's clear they're moving on from Cam. Obviously, they moved on from their coach. Luke Kuechly retired. So it's like Christian McCaffrey and then a bunch of new faces. And Coach Matt Rhule is going to try to do what he did at Temple and what he did at Baylor and really what he's done everywhere from what he's learned with Coach Paterno and Coach Coughlin. And he's just constantly getting better. He's constantly reading. I love Coach Rhule and love playing for him. He's another very cerebral coach and very self-aware of what's going on around him. So he'll do great things there. They obviously have great support from the owner. A guy who's been there and done it and seen how it's done right with the Rooney family in Pittsburgh. So Coach Rhule's going to do a great job. He hired a great staff, some familiar faces on there as well for me and for you guys, and I'm excited to watch them this year.
Switching gears a little bit, looking over to Temple football, Rod Carey's staff, obviously they weren't able to get more than a few spring practices in. If they had been able to get a full spring season in, they were able to play, what position battles were you looking forward to?
That's a great question, and I'll be honest, I'm not as close to the program as I used to be. This has to be the last class of players I truly know. It's very weird, very, very weird for me. I think they always say, like, you feel old once you don't know any of your former teammates anymore that at least played at Temple. Mm-hmm. So when Anthony Russo retires, when he moves on to the NFL or whatever he decides to do, this is it. I played with Sean Bradley. I played with Chappelle Russell. I played with Quincy Roche. I played with Matt Hennessy. So, be honest with you, I don't know the team like I used to. And I didn't want to come on today. But I will tell you this. the position that I'm always looking forward to watching is quarterback. And everyone knows my bias with Anthony Russo. We went to the same high school. We played the same CYO football together. We grew up down the street from each other. But I'm only biased with Anthony because I've seen the work he's put in, not because I know him. I wouldn't put my reputation as a media, whatever I am, on the line for Anthony because I like him. It's because I see the work he's put in. I think last year was a first year in offense with some new pieces that won him Jadon Blue, who took off. He really did, behind in front of a great offensive line. That lose two key pieces in Hennessy and Fair, but here's a real opportunity to see Klein and Bukozi and Moore at tackle, and a host of people that got in last year to replace them when all those guys got hurt up front over a little period of time there, a little stretch, I think, big point to the end of the season. And then obviously Ray Davis, who had a great year. Who's going to step up behind him? We saw a bunch of people that would come in when Jagger got hurt or when those two needed a blow late in games. But how are they going to handle the Ray Davis situation? A guy that almost rushed, probably would have rushed for 1,000 yards. I think he missed a couple games last year. Would have rushed for 1,000 yards. He was at 936. And then how are they going to replace the linebacker position? That'd probably be the position I would be looking at the most if I was there, if I was involved, if I wasn't in season, because they're losing some studs that we know. And another thing that Temple football has been known for is that defensive line and the rotating defensive line. Last year, we had a first-team All-American who has moved on to Miami, and Temple will play week one. If everything goes right with whatever's happening right now, this virus, they'll be playing there week one, and you'll be playing against Quincy Roche, who had 13 sacks last year, and he had six pass deflections, and a guy who really took over late in the year and drove that Temple defense, and then Majay's back, Levine's gone, Mezde's gone, Diabate's gone, and you're losing a core piece, but you still have a guy like Archibald who's a stud. So there's so many great players on that Temple defense, and usually they come in droves. Who's going to replace them? So my eyes would probably be on the defensive side of the ball. And I think last year they had some issues at punter. They had some, you know, Will Mobley, a kicker, was solid. What's the story of the team going to be this year? Because they were up and down, and can they develop some consistency with the schedule that they could really – put some big wins on the table against the Miami team who had a down year last year and a Rutgers team who is flipping their program around completely. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. They're going to be at Navy, which I'm ecstatic about. You guys know how much I love going to Annapolis. And, you know, they have Idaho. So it's going to be a fun year next year for home games and for road trips at Memphis, at Tulane. SMU comes home. You're at Orlando. Play ECU and Cincy to finish the year back-to-back at home. So it's a fun schedule. I know I just rambled on about all different things with Temple football, but I'm excited. And I'm excited to see what Anthony Russo can do this year. Year two, Mac, Blue, who's going to replace Kenny Yeboah? David Martin Robinson, is it his time? And then Ray Davis and that offensive line. So they are loaded again. But let's see who's going to step up and bring depth, because you know injuries are inevitable, and you know season goes on, you need constant depth to play well throughout the year.
Colin, you don't play quarterback, you didn't play that position, but you played football, you played with tight ends, you talked about how much you know Anthony. We've talked about it so many times before. We know the arm talent is there with him. We know that the ability is there, and he's pretty open about his successes and his failures, and he's talked about, you know, I've got to get better at with decision making. You know, he'll rip one throw where he looks like a future pro, and then he throws a pick six in the bowl game that kind of turns things a little bit. How does he turn the corner on that? Is it as simple? Are we going to see better things out of him just being in the same system with a guy like Mike Yuremovich for two seasons in a row as a starter? Is it that simple? If you were to try to get into his head and get people into the game, how does a quarterback turn the corner on something like that?
I think you make great points about Anthony, and he knows that he's open about it. That's why I enjoy Anthony, because I think as a player, you have to be open with your struggles. The media wants to hear him, but you know, there's probably more there, right? There's more that he's trying to get better at. Is it my footwork? Is it my strength in the offseason? Anthony's really improved his body over the years. He's a big-bodied guy. He's a Big Ben-type body. Not Big Ben-type body now, mm-hmm. but Big Ben entered the league-type body. Mm-hmm. You know, but, like, Anthony's a big kid. He plays big. He runs pretty well, too. We saw UCF 2 years ago. He run pretty well. So I don't know if it's, hey, year two. I don't know if it's, hey, I'm a it's my fifth year in college football now. I'm ready to go. I said last year on your podcast and on the pregame show and on our call with Harry Donahue, the great Harry Donahue, Temple legend.
Ring of Honor guy now.
Yeah, Ring of Honor guy now. Good for him, because we were concerned. We were like, when is this going to happen? And it did. I was ecstatic. And then Hall of Famer Paul Palmer. So you could tell who's got the least credit, who's got the least amount of credentials on that group.
But, yeah, but you played the game most recently. So, you know, there's that too.
I guess so. We can call it playing. Yeah, I don't know if we can call it playing. I would more participation, but I appreciate it. But no, like I said last year, I said, I think the ceiling for Anthony is the MVP and then the Heisman conversation. And everyone's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. My argument was if Anthony could be the American Conference MVP, he could be in at least the top 10 Heisman. And that sounds crazy, but it's consistent. It's happened every single year with premier quarterbacks that have come out of it, with Keenan Reynolds at Navy, with Milton at UCF, with any quarterback, Blake Bortles, with Teddy Bridgewater, anybody that was part of the American Conference that have played well, they're in the conversation. I know that's an extreme and that's a high, but I believe that much in Anthony Russo. And like you said, John, when you see some of these throws, he throws these deep balls sometimes, which he didn't connect on as much last year. At times he did, but other times you're like, this guy did not miss a throw. 2 years ago at BC, I thought it was one of his best games ever. He threw two picks that got deflected. One was ripped through someone's hand so hard on an out route that it popped up and it got picked. I forget the other one. I think it was a late in the game, just kind of prayer. I forget. Maybe it had been a one pick. But he didn't make a bad throw in the entire game versus Boston College at Boston College. And this was two seasons ago. So he shows flashes, John. You're right. I probably haven't answered your question because there isn't really one. That's why you asked it to me. But Anthony continues to grind. Like I said, I respect him because of his work ethic. And I think him and his second year in the offense, second year leader of this new realm with Coach Carey, I think he'll have a good year.
Now with Trad Beatty, I know you don't get a chance to spend a ton of time around him. He'll be the backup now, barring anything, unless Kenick Bonner Stewart makes a huge leap. So kind of a two-pronged question with Trad. And the first one is, do things change with Anthony now? Like, I mean, at least on the surface, it looks like Anthony and Todd Senteo were pretty close. But do you think at times, and this probably sounds like a little bit more of like if fans were looking from the outside looking in, do you think Anthony breathes a little bit easier? It's not to say that Trad couldn't come in and really compete, because Trad's got a good arm too, and he's mobile too. Do things change a little bit with Trad not being there and Anthony maybe looking over his shoulder with Trad being around, with Todd Senteo being around? What do you think that dynamic could be now with Todd being gone and Trad being there as the backup?
Well, first off, I'm going to say Anthony handled it so well last year. If you watch Anthony Russo, which I stared him down every time Todd Senteo was in the game. I barely watched the game. I wanted to see how his reaction was to everything.
Right.
You would have thought that Peyton Manning in his prime was subbing in for him. It didn't matter what it was. He was a true pro's pro. And to me, that shows you who Anthony Russo is. That shows you where he's going to be. That shows you where his maturity level is as a football player. Not that it was there before, but that's a true definition of, here comes a new quarterback. This is my team. I lit it up last year. I'm not doing as well this year. And here comes a new quarterback every third series of every quarter or every half, no matter what happens. And he handled it like a pro's pro. So kudos to him, one, two. This current situation, I think there could be a little bit of a deep breath, because I don't know how Trad would come in and be as dynamic as Todd. Now, Trad can run well, and he's a good athlete. He's a big, big man. He's a very good quarterback. But Todd is very different in a way. He is elusive. He can throw the ball well. He's a guy who played a ton of football in high school and tore it up. And South Pine's some pretty good players. Tore up the scout team over his career at Temple, which is a huge thing to go to the scout team and perform at a high level. So he was tearing up a really couple of good defenses at Florida. I mean, excuse me, at Temple. He's from Florida, excuse me. But I'm a Todd fan. I'm wishing best of luck at Colorado State with Coach Adazio. But I think Anthony's going to handle whatever he does well. And if that was his biggest hurdle to get over in college, he knocked it out of the park.
What's next for you now? You have your Not For Long podcast. You're a podcaster yourself. You've been doing some work at 97.3 ESPN Atlantic City. If you're still around and you're not competing for a spot in the NFL, you're still probably going to be helping Lance Bailey out over at Lower Cape May Regional High School. I know a lot of stuff is up in the air in terms of when, sports are going to resume, but is it just keeping yourself active with those ventures in your life and just kind of figuring out what's next?
Yeah. I mean, we've gotten to know each other well over the year, John. You know, I'm going to have my hand in a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I'll do some marketing stuff for my mother's company, LSL Brands. Again, they're on hold now with what's going on. They're based out of Bucks County. She has stores in Cape May and Princeton and in Peddler's Village and in Doylestown and Fox and Holly. That's all on hold. So I'll be doing some marketing stuff with her. I'll be coaching football. I'll probably be living in Cape May and coaching football with Lance Bailey and Lower Cape May Regional. I'm doing my own podcast. I'm revisiting it. I'm fully invested. I'm getting back to the grind of it. I'm kind of really hard to do it in season, really, even in the offseason. There's so much going on. I'll be involved with 97.3 ESPN. There's some things going on with that could possibly be, I don't even know. I don't want to break too many things, but there'll be some things coming. Stay tuned to Twitter coming with 97.3, but also some other things coming along with that as well when it comes to some of my buddies that work there and what's next for them. Or used to work there, I should say. So we'll see what happens. It's fun to keep involved with everything. But for me, the number one thing that burner's moving is I'm planning to play in the NFL this fall, and I'll be doing everything possible physically for myself to get there. I think I deserve a chance, but, you know, we all know about fair. It doesn't exist. So it was a great opportunity, the XFL. I think my stock is better now than it was last year when I left the AAF. Mm-hmm. And that's really all I can ask for.
One other question I had for you before we start throwing around some ideas for what to do with ourselves while we're all quarantined here. I want to hear about any social distancing tips you have for us and podcast recommendations and show recommendations. One of the things I want to ask you about along the lines of Pat Kraft. So the news broke today that Scott Dolson is going to be Indiana's new athletic director. He's replacing Fred Glass. I know there was a little bit of angst there in the Temple fan base because, you know, Pat's an Indiana guy, and if he was a candidate, serious candidate for that job, that might have been a potential landing spot for him. He's, I guess, you know, as of now, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to end up at Indiana. You've been around Pat. What's he like as an athletic director, and what does it mean to Temple that he's at least going to be sticking around and not ending up at Indiana?
Pat is the best, and I don't want to speak for other athletic programs. I've only heard great things of how he's with everybody, but I know he's a former football player. I've actually gotten to know some of his family members well from being in Chicago. He's from that area. He is the best as a football player because he played the game. He knows everything about it. He knows the ins and outs. He knows the grind. He knows how players look at athletic directors, right? Pat is youthful. He's fun. Some of us, you know, all of us have been around him, right? He's visible. And from what I hear from people that work for him, he's a true, true open-door policy guy, and he just gets it. So I'm a huge Pat Kraft fan. He's done a lot for me, supporting me outside of football. Sure, he did when I was playing there, but, you know, through Al Scoop, through doing stuff with Harry Donahue and Paul Palmer and covering the games for Temple Radio. I've done signing days for Temple Radio remote this past year, and I've done them at Temple. So Pat has always been the underlying guy who gives the head nod for me being involved in that. So individually, I love Pat. For people that work for him, I hear great things about him. And then people, for players on other teams, men's and women's sports, he's been fantastic. So this is a huge win for Temple that he's got to stay. He's been here through so much change athletically. He knows how to talk people off a ledge, I'm sure, because there's been so many different football coaches, and he's been consistent with bringing in the right guy. So I'm excited that he is staying at Temple for now, or whatever it is, because he truly has Temple's best interests at heart. He loves the city. He loves the area. And, you know, I'm really happy for Pat and his family. He's a good man, and he's a good ambassador for Temple Athletics and Temple University as a whole.
All right, so I want to try to have some fun with this, again, in a time where things are kind of uncertain and anxious. What's your advice for guys like us or college students here, like the Sams and Graham? You have any movie recommendations, podcast recommendations? What are we to do with ourselves right now when we're all working from home and doing all this stuff remotely?
All right, so I'll start. That's a great question.
This now, is where we need your wisdom and leadership here.
I'm going to give you a Mark Trestman speech. No, I can't. Wow, that's a great question. So I'm just going to be full transparency. I've not been in quarantine like everyone else in the Northeast has. It's been a little more laid back here in Florida, and I think people have seen the pictures and videos from everyone on the beach, and yep, Florida's about waking up and saying, oh boy. I was out at a establishment with my teammates who we just, the league just folded with, enjoying some adult beverages. when the league ended and the place was packed with everyone younger, not working anymore. It was very like night before Thanksgiving feel. And then Saturday was the same, and then everyone parted ways, you know, Sunday, Monday, and kind of we all moved on. Very sad thing that I've gotten used to over the years. But, you know, so we've been hanging out, having a good time. But now here in Florida, everything is closing. I'm in Central Time, but everything closes at 4 o'clock Central Time. I have family in Key West right now. They're telling me the bars close in Key West at 5 o'clock. If the bars are closed in Key West, what else is there to do in Key West? So I don't know what they're going to do. I know the bars and restaurants are closed up there. So, you know, I'll be honest with you, this is my first adjustment now to being quarantined full time. So I would say this. I saw someone tweet today. What are we going to do, everybody? Are we going to gain weight or are we going to lose weight over this next couple weeks here? So maybe start a little, you know, in-house workout, go out for a walk, stay active. And then for me, I'm a big podcast guy. One of the podcasts I've been suggesting to people lately, because sometimes I just get run down by sports, especially in season, or especially for you guys that are constantly Temple, or maybe ESPN or whatever you like to listen to, Fox, is the Dax Shepard. He's an actor.
Yeah.
The Armchair Expert. That's a very unique podcast. I don't listen to all of them, but I listen to the actors or the people that I enjoy that are on there. There's one with Dog the Bounty Hunter on there, and it's the most unique podcast I've ever listened to about Dog's life. Everyone goes in with the same thought about Dog the Bounty Hunter, and then you listen to the podcast, and you have a completely different thought of Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Wait, this is so, Dax Shepard talking to Dog the Bounty Hunter?
Yeah, yep. Dax has like celebrities. Dax has like celebrities on, actors, athletes. There's some really, really good ones. He has people on from King of Thrones. He it's a very, very unique thing to listen to if you're trying to do something different. So I like that. TV show wise,
do you think the Sams and Graham know who Dak is married to?
No clue.
Yeah, there's no way. No way we know.
I know who the Bounty Hunter is.
I don't even know who the Bounty Hunter is.
He's married to He's married to Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Kristen Bell.
I love Kristen Bell.
There we go, Graham.
Good place.
So I would say this. I would stick to the FX movies. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Wolf of Wall Street, you know, any of those just great wheelhouse classics. Wedding Crashers. I'm an internship guy. The Google movie,
yeah,
with The Feel Good. Oh, anything with Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn, I'm all about.
You know what I highly recommend that I just watched last night?
What's that?
For the Times, is the movie 2012.
God, that's dark.
I have not.
I'll tell you what. The one thing you can do is listen to the Not For Long podcast. That's one thing
you got
to
plug your own podcast.
I'm going to be getting that back going. I promise. I've been saying that forever, but I really do. I have some of my teammates on. I've had two or three, but I want to pump like three out of it. Just the first start of it, just three, so people can kind of binge listen to it. And then I'll have my teammates on, I'll have operations guys on, I'm planning to have Coach Trustman on, and then my friends around, just all sports of what's going on right now, because the NFL, this is fantastic, this free agency stuff. We saw Matakevich is going to Buffalo.
Yeah.
He got a great payday, a guy who is just torn up special teams in the league, and he signed for, I think, 2 years, $9 million, mm-hmm, with Sean McDermott, who's a North Penn LaSalle guy, for the Delaware County, Bucks County area people outside of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
He's with Deion Dawkins, which is a great spot. And maybe Tyler will get some more playing time as a true linebacker as well, but he'll tear it up on special teams. I thought he was a candidate to go to the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, that's what I was thought of too.
Right? I mean, that would make sense. But no, I'm excited. Temple football's all getting paid. Matt Ioannidis got paid a couple of years ago. Tavon Young got paid last year. He'll hopefully be healthy this year. He's a great player. I know he's battled some injuries. And there's a lot of great guys that are doing great things, Temple football-wise, on and off the field. Robbie Anderson's the guy who's going to get paid.
Yep.
I don't know if he doesn't claim Temple anymore, but he will. But, P.J. Walker, that's going to be the fun one, right? Who gets picked up out of the XFL? And then P.J. Walker, where does he go? Who does he land with? Does he have a potential to have a significant role, or is he going to be the bottom-tier guy that he was before? And I don't mean bottom-tier in a bad way, but third quarterback practice squad guy, which is still, you know, one of 60 human beings on Earth is pretty impressive, whatever it is. You guys saw the quarterbacks in the XFL They're a really hard breed to find, and PJ is one of the best in the world. So kudos to him, and he's had a great year.
Colin, this was awesome. I really appreciate it. Stay safe down there. Hopefully we'll talk to you soon, and hopefully you can get home pretty soon. Travel safely, and thanks for spending some time with us, man. We appreciate it.
Guys, I love Scoop. You guys know that, and love coming on, and you guys have all become friends over the years. Thank you for having me on, and you know I'm willing to come on whenever.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Colin. Thanks.
All right, so a big thanks to Colin Thompson. It's always fun to record with him. Glad he's, I guess, staying safe down in Florida, although it sounds like he didn't quarantine himself recently. But a lot of cool stuff ahead for him. Again, thanks to Colin for joining us. Guys, we'll keep talking here on The Scoop. And another piece of news that's come along, not football-related, but basketball-related, is, you know, we've been talking in previous weeks about how there could be some roster movement with the Temple basketball program. Obviously, their season comes to a bizarre end where there's no conference tournament played. Again, so much has happened in the world and in the world of sports over the last week. So there was no American Athletic Conference tournament. We knew that Temple would be a long shot to win 4 games in 4 days, but they didn't even have that opportunity. Season ends. Justin Hamilton announced soon after that he is intending to transfer. Last season, he averaged 4.1 points per game, 12.7 minutes per game. This season, averaged 3.3 points per game, just a shade over 10 minutes per game. Things just didn't come along for him. You know, I think, of course, the coaching staff and the fan base would have hoped to see him flourish a little bit more, whether he was playing with his back to the basket or stepping out to knock down some jumpers, but that just didn't happen for him. What's the impact here? Are you guys surprised? Are you not surprised? Where do you think things went wrong? Of course, we haven't talked to Justin personally. We haven't talked to Aaron McKee personally. There really hasn't been, and before I turn it over to you guys, we haven't had access to coaches or players over the last week. But what does this mean for the program? Or is this a good thing moving forward? Is this expected? What do you guys think about this?
I think it's open good.
Yeah, we got three guys over the phone.
There's a problem with recording on the phone, right?
Yeah, for those of you who are listening, so I've got Graham and the Sams on a call, and when you're on a FaceTime call, it's like whoever's speaking, their picture gets larger, and I just see them computing, and they all have this like smile on their face. It's adorable. I love it. So, who wants to go first?
Graham, go ahead.
There you go.
I'll just say that it really wasn't surprising, just because you could see as the season went on, there really just wasn't a role for Justin anymore. He wasn't playing some games, playing very limited minutes in other games, mostly when, you know, Jake Forrester would get into foul trouble early on. They just need another big to come in. But he talks about putting on weight this offseason. It didn't look that much bigger. He didn't look like he improved his jump shot or improved his physicality in the post. So it just felt like a transfer made sense, because he wasn't improving very much, and he wasn't getting much of a role under Aaron McKee. So it's not surprising, and I think, you know, Temple has a guy in Jake Forrester for next year they can rely on in the paint, and they don't even need to play with that many bigs. It seems like a shorter lineup was working for them. So I don't think it'll affect them that much going forward. It maybe just makes it a little less confusing with the whole lineup.
I think to just overall looking at the grand picture, like grand scheme of things, like we came into the season expecting, like, hey, this is going to be Justin Hamilton's year where he's going to break out and maybe, you know, play a stretch four, play the five. And not that to give credit to this, but I mean, the Facebook group, his father, I believe either his father, or one of his family members was saying that, you know, Justin, we love Temple when we get there. We still love Temple, but, you know, the move from a stretch four to the five just wasn't playing to a strong suit there, and we just feel like now it's best to move on. And I mean, that was clear in his play towards the end of the season. He was just another body at that point. Damian Moore was seeing more playing time than him, and it just seemed to never work out as to how we would have hoped and how Temple would have hoped. But I don't know how much this hurts his roster. It just depends on where you look at for the future, if they're going to add maybe a big man on as a grad transfer, or maybe add somebody from this 2020 class that is unsigned. So I'm not sure how much they're going to miss Justin, because it's clear he just did not have large enough impact this year to really give you a feel for how much they're going to miss him.
I get the decision, just because the production level wasn't there, but I think like the potential was. Graham mentioned, he talked a lot about, both Aaron McKee and Justin Hamilton talked about him putting on weight in the offseason, him coming in with an improved jump shot, and those things would have been awesome for him for this year and for his fit into the team. It just, neither of those things happened. We talked so much about the team not being able to play the way that Aaron McKee, quote-unquote, wants to play, like the way he sees his vision for the team. And, I mean, physically, Justin Hamilton, it feels like he should fit into that perfectly. He's long, he's lengthy. If he can run the floor, if he can stretch the floor as a four, if he can knock down the deep ball, but it just – the production level wasn't there, and if he's not going to improve within the last season of this season, then it didn't feel like he was just the right piece, and it wasn't going to work out, because you definitely needed a strong five around him. He would have played more than four, and he could run the floor, stretch the floor, but the production level just wasn't there, and Graham mentioned his body didn't make much of a leap.
So moving forward, and again, we've got I believe we have a mailbag question about this, and we know that we're going to get questions about roster movement and stuff like that. When it comes to recruiting, again, everything's been turned upside down in the world of sports and the world in general, of course. And again, we hope that you're all enjoying this podcast and in a happy, healthy place. And we appreciate you tuning in and listening. Just in case you're not familiar with it, there's no in-person recruiting until at least April 15th on either side in college recruiting right now. So Aaron McKee and his staff can't go see players. They can't host them on visits, and that's until at least April 15th. I don't know if that will change, if they'll push that out. As I understand it, they are allowed to contact recruits over the phone. We've heard that they've been involved with a few players here. You know, we mentioned Tariq Silver. Sam Cohn's done a story on Tariq Silver down at Tallahassee Community College. So since then, his recruitment has picked up. He's picked up a few more offers. Sam Newman, you mentioned it. What, on April 5th, was it that he said he's going to start paring down his list, or did he?
Either April 3rd or April 5th, one of those days. But it said he was going to. He tweeted that he's going to trim it down to his top five.
And so, who else has gotten involved with his recruitment now? It's East Carolina.
It's College April 5th. He's making the decision. It's Drexel, Toledo, East Carolina, and College of Charleston. And up until before Temple made the official offer, Temple was probably the biggest name to come out of his recruitment. And now he's picked up a couple bigger schools.
And Sam, he said he's going to pick between those schools, or those are some other ones that have gotten in on him?
Those are Drexel, Toledo, East Carolina, and College of Charleston have all offered him since Temple. But April 5th is when he's going to narrow his longer list down to just five teams. Because he told me he's had like 20 teams be in contact with him. He's had maybe 5 to 10 actually offer him. But he's going to cut his list down on April 5th to just five and then go from there.
That would include
you say that Temple's the best offer that he holds right now? Theoretically speaking,
I would say yes.
Unless I know that Georgia was in to see him. John Linehan's on the staff there. He's a Chester guy.
Used to be
on the Temple staff, I guess in an operations role. And I don't know. Again, we don't know if Georgia's offered him for sure. But if he had an SEC offer, that would be something. If you haven't had the chance to read Sam's story from a few weeks ago, go back and read it. I mean, again, if Temple does bring him in, they had some immediate shooting help. There's Russell Harrison, we've mentioned, a JUCO prospect down at Clarendon College in Texas, who's a 6'7", kind of 3'4", type of guy, a small forward. And then Brendan Barry, we've talked about before, who would be a grad transfer point guard from Dartmouth, had a hip injury back in September, announced his decision to enter the portal or his desire to enter the transfer portal not long after that. So again, when it comes to looking at roster turnover, if based on sources we've talked to, people we trust, if those are three guys that they're looking at and there are still, as of now, only two roster spots open, we know that there's probably going to be more roster turnover. There could be more roster turnover along the way. So if we go to the mailbag here, first question, this is from the message board. This first question comes from SJ Al. Specifically for basketball, does Pat Kraft have conversations with Aaron McKee about how the program is operating with regards to player regression and how the assistant coaches are performing? Yes, Pat and Aaron talk frequently. And I get where this question is going. Sometimes, we've been asked by fans, are there going to be any changes with the staff? No, I don't anticipate any staff changes. And I understand if you look at this, any of us could talk about this. You look at the roster. Statistically, a lot of players, statistically speaking, did regress. Nate Pierre-Louis did. Justin Hamilton did. Dre Perry and J.P. Moorman had their issues with injuries, and the team underperformed after getting off to a good start. But I know for a fact, through talking to both of those guys, that they both talk frequently. Aaron wants to win. He doesn't want to mess around. He wants to get good players into the program, but they have a pretty good, an open, honest relationship. But if SJ Al is hinting here at, like, with regards to player regression and how the assistant coaches are performing, you know, I don't know if he's outright asking if there's going to be a change on the staff. I don't anticipate any changes on the staff. But yeah, those guys talk all the time about that. I don't know if you guys had anything else you wanted to chime in on there.
No, you pretty much summed it up.
Oh, thank you, Sam. I appreciate that. next question comes from Mike TB 31. Will you be boycotting drinking Corona until the pandemic is over? I
answer this with an absolutely hell not, because it's
wow,
so
Graham.
Good.
Wow.
No, I love a Corona. And,
I just want to remind you guys, you guys are all of legal drinking age, right?
I'm 22.
Yes. Graham is of legal drinking.
Yes,
age.
I want to keep things on the up and up here on this podcast. I don't want to have anything that's going to be overly controversial. Graham,
I mean, it's not the wild, wild west just yet.
So Sam, alcohol is a beverage you can consume in a year or so, and a Corona is a type of alcohol. So I'm a big fan, and I don't think there should be any reason you should hold back.
Thanks for the clarification, Graham.
Yeah. I
don't know that I'm boycotting anything. I think I've been drinking more wine than anything else and trying to relax as much as possible, but no. And we know that Rod Carey won't. When I talked to him last week, he said he didn't want to call it the coronavirus. He called it COVID-19, which he's correct, but he said he's a big Corona fan. So no, I don't think anybody's boycotting it. This is more along the lines of what we're talking about in terms of a message bag question. This comes from TU Owls 37. Assuming there will be more transfers than just Hamilton, do you believe they will be player-driven, coach-driven, or mutual decisions to part ways? If you're not able to name names, what type of player should we consider most likely to transfer and why?
That's a good question.
A well-thought-out question.
Yes, it's like basically saying we don't want to ask you flat out. And again, like I think we mentioned this last week, do we have a good idea of who's staying and who's leaving? We do. The reason we don't want to, and I'm not saying this for show, and I'm not saying this, I don't think any of us are saying this to posture, it's just because, A, it would be unfair to, not, I don't want to say it's unfair to speculate. Half of podcasting and sports talk radio, a decent part of it is we're prognosticating, we're speculating, we're trying to source things out. But we also know how fluid things can be. And I do think that a lot of things are on the table in terms of Aaron McKee and the staff looking at this roster. Just like I said, they're seriously looking at least a grad transfer, two junior college players, another name that I heard, and we got to get a little bit more confirmation on it, a possible guard that they're looking at still unsigned for the 2020 class that plays out in the Midwest. So if they're looking at those names and they're contemplating this stuff, you know that there's at least that they've got some irons in the fire there. How it all shapes out, we'll see. The transfer portal is an ever-evolving thing. You look at, I don't expect them to get anybody from Wichita State, but how about what's going on out there with almost the entire roster looking like it wants to leave from Wichita State? And you're talking about Jamaris Burton and Noah Fernandez and Eric Stevenson and guys like that. Yes, there's going to be more roster movement. Do we think it's player-driven, coach-driven, or mutual decisions to part ways? Probably different for every case. I think, again, any of us could tell all of you listening that at the end of the season, they have individual meetings with these guys. And, you know, sure, some of these guys might have their mind made up where they say, yeah, it's in my best interest to move on. Or depending on how serious Aaron is with this, he might say to a couple of these guys, like, listen, you know, it's going to be in your best interest to move on. We want to go in a different direction. So I think it's probably going to be a little bit of both. Again, I don't know where you guys kind of fall in on this and what your thoughts are. You know, you guys cover the program too. I mean, what do you think? It's just a mix, or do you think it's more coach driven?
I would say it's a case by case thing. I think it depends on the player, whether it's what Aaron McKee sees in his future of Temple basketball, or whether it's the player thinks that he's going to get his dues in the next coming years at Temple. So I don't think it's fair to say it's all Coach McKee or it's all the players. I think it's a case-by-case thing.
Yeah, I would agree. And there definitely is a big culture shift when McKee and his staff come in, and there's different expectations for these guys. And, you know, if guys aren't fitting into the program well, you can kind of put that more on it's a coach-driven thing than a player-driven thing, but it's definitely a case-by-case basis. And as changes happen, you'll kind of be able to understand, I'm sure, the different cases that that turned out that way.
I think it's more just not to differ from the crowd here, but I think it's more maybe just a mutual thing, just because depending on, you know, when a coach comes in, and there's always roster attrition, this is nothing new, but with that said, it seems like something like this is just always bound to happen, and it seems like for somebody to go transfer, they're just going to have to be on the same page as the coaching staff, whether they want to stay here or not.
So again, we'll have more recruiting updates in the coming weeks. Again, it'll be interesting. Again, as of now, recruiting, in-person recruiting, is limited until at least April 15th. Again, that's until at least April 15th. We talk about fluid situations in sports, and now we have a fluid situation in life with the coronavirus outbreak. Again, I hope that, as people have been saying, I hope that this flattens out by people staying smart, staying inside, staying healthy, supporting each other out there. So, but we'll try to get as much done as we can over the phone in terms of calling people and finding out what is going on with recruiting. And sure, there's a chance that between, you know, recording this week and recording next week, that there could be more announcements with transfers. We'll see what happens here. One thing I did want to give a shout out to one of our loyal listeners. If you check out Twitter, if you go to one of our listeners and one of our Owl Scoop readers, Kurt Goodwin, he's at Kurt OU on Twitter, I think is his handle here. He did this thing that's pretty funny. If you check it out on Twitter, I told him I would give him a shout out here. He came up with a Temple specific bracket, a March Madness bracket, where he has people voting right now. Have you guys seen this yet?
Yeah, it's really well done. It's very well done. Everything is really well thought out, I thought.
Yeah, so he has a Cheney region, a Dumphy region, a Litwack region, and a McKee region, and his four number one seeds. So it's basically a bunch of players here. Lavoie Allen is the number one seed in the McKee region. Lynn Greer is the number one seed in the Litwack region. Khalif Wyatt, the number one seed in the Dumphy region. And Deontay Christmas is the number one seed in the Cheney region. So he has people voting right now in this, you know, survive and advance tournament format. I told Kurt I would give him a shout out here on the podcast. I think it's cool. Again, we all need some stuff to occupy our minds and occupy our time here. And I think it's a cool thing that, again, if you're a Temple fan and you're hankering for some sort of bracket and some sort of March Madness with the NCAA tournament being canceled and everything on hold right now, kind of a cool thing to check out. Guys, how do we close this out here? I mean, I don't want to be dramatic. I'm sure hopefully we'll see each other again, but what is life like for you guys now as students who are taking online classes, and you're either in Philly or back home? You know, Sam Cohn, you're staying local in Philly and not going back up to Boston. Sam Newman, you're in Reading. Graham, you're back out in the glorious land of Downingtown, right?
Glorious land, yeah.
What is this like for you guys as students?
I'll go first. I think for seniors, I think a lot of people are very disappointed just how the senior season turned out. I'm honestly pretty okay with how we have to change things. I think online classes are interesting and everyone's kind of doing their best. I had an online yoga class this morning. That was really weird.
Oh my God, you took an online yoga class?
How that worked.
Yes, wait. So you had an online yoga class? Was this done through Zoom?
It was. It was done through Zoom. We jumped in on Zoom.
Does Kyle know about this?
No, because that was on purpose. It would probably bury me. You could join in with just audio or video. It's still kind of fluid, but we just kind of had Graham.
We'll fire off a text to Kyle here.
Teacher in their living room.
Wow.
What did you say, John?
I said we'll fix that in a second. We're going to text Kyle right now in our group chat to let him know.
Go right ahead. No, because I had a 2-credit yoga class. It was perfect. It was a great way to kind of – it was a very senior class, get 14 credits. So that one's the only one that's, like, required online twice a week. But she also was like, take your time. You know, it doesn't matter if you miss a class. The other classes, everything's just kind of gotten easier. Like, we have a group project that's gotten a little bit easier. We have movies that we're watching and there's less of a workload. And then you could just kind of move on into real life after that with graduation. I really hope I have a graduation ceremony. I know Penn just canceled theirs. That's my main concern, but I don't have a problem with staying home with free food and my dog and just doing online classes and getting into more of the Philly stuff.
Sam, what's going
on? Sam, you want to take it?
Sure. I mean, I guess it's just been like a kind of weird experience for me to just like, you know, go down to an office, just sit down there and, you know, really just you watch class happen. I mean, it's not much different. But you're just watching it happen through your laptop, I guess. It's more convenient, I guess, than getting up and going to, you know, walking the class. But as far as it being, like, different, I guess things have become, you know, a bit easier just with schoolwork and that sort of stuff. But, you know, these are unprecedented times, so kind of just have to roll with it. I mean, I'm cool with it for now. We'll see what happens of that after I've been in the house for a couple more weeks. So
yeah the one thing is, I don't plan to shower. Did not today because I don't need to. Just get the camera. No one can see. No one's gonna care. It's wonderful.
Come on, Graham.
Anyway. it's weird. It's different. I mean, as Sam said, like, you kind of just got to roll with it because that's the unprecedented circumstances we're in. But I will say, I'm not a fan of online classes. I feel like it's made me super unproductive. I've had my first two Zoom online classes today, and they were just odd, different experiences. I'm the kind of person that, like, I'll get more done if I'm getting up and going out and seeing people face to face. So, I mean, it's going to take some getting used to, but I get it. There's a learning curve to it. Well, I am hunkered down in my apartment here in Philly and just trying to make the best of it.
We're all trying to make the best of it. I appreciate all of you guys continuing to listen to The Scoop and subscribe to it. Again, we'll try to bring you as much much coverage as we possibly can, whether that's football, whether that's basketball, as much recruiting content as we can get you. Again, hopefully everybody is happy and safe and occupying their time. And we hope to talk to you next week. Thanks for tuning in. Again, big thank you to Colin Thompson for joining us from Florida. Thank you to you guys. We'll be in touch. We'll talk more about Graham's online yoga class and what that means for him. And thank you all again for listening. We'll talk to you next week.